This reflection can be extended according to the sevenfold properties of creatures, which is a sevenfold testimony to the divine power, wisdom, and goodness. If we consider the origin, magnitude, multitude, beauty, fullness, activity, and order of all things, the origin of things according to their creation, distinction, and embellishment, as the work of 6 days proclaims, the divine power that produces all things from nothing, the divine wisdom that clearly distinguishes all things, and the divine goodness that lavishly adorns all things. The magnitude of things in the mass of their length, width, and depth, and their great power extending in length, width, and depth, as appears in the diffusion of light, in the efficiency of their operations, which are internal, continuous, and diffused, as appears in the operation of fire. All this clearly manifests the immensity of the power, wisdom, and goodness of the Triune God, who by his power, presence, and essence exists uncircumscribed in all things. The multitude of things in their generic, specific, and individual diversity, in substance, form, or figure, in efficiency, beyond all human calculation, clearly suggests and shows the immensity of the three previously mentioned attributes in God. The beauty of things in the variety of light, shape, and color, in simple, mixed, or even organic bodies, such as heavenly bodies, and minerals, like stones and metals, and plants and animals, clearly proclaims the three previously mentioned attributes. The fullness of things by which matter is full of forms because of seminal principles, form is full of power, because of its active potency. Power is full of effects because of its efficiency, clearly declares the same attributes. The activity, multiple in as much as it is, natural, artificial, and moral, by its manifold variety, shows the immensity of that power, art, and goodness, which is the cause of being, the basis of understanding and the order of living. The order in duration, position, and influence, that is, before and after, higher and lower, nobler and less noble, in the book of creation, clearly indicates the primacy, sublimity, and dignity of the first principle, and thus the infinity of his power. The order of the divine law, precepts and judgments in the book of Scripture shows the immensity of his wisdom, and the order of the divine sacraments, benefits and recompense in the body of the church shows the immensity of his goodness. In this way, order itself leads us most clearly into the first and highest, the most powerful, the wisest, and the best. Whoever, therefore, is not enlightened by such splendor of created things is blind. Whoever is not awakened by such outcries is deaf. Whoever does not praise God because of all these effects is dumb. Whoever does not discover the first principle from such clear signs is a fool. Therefore, open your eyes, alert the ears of your spirit, open your lips, and apply your heart, so that in all creatures you may see, hear, praise, love, and worship, glorify and honor your God. Let the whole world rise against you. For because of this, the whole world will fight against the foolish. On the contrary, it will be a matter of glory for the wise, who can say with the prophet, You have gladdened me, Lord, by your deeds, and in the works of your hands I will rejoice. How great are your works, O Lord! You have made all things in wisdom. The earth is full with your creatures. In chapter 2, on contemplating God and his vestiges in the sense world. Concerning the mirror of things perceived through sensation, we can see God, not only through them as through his vestiges, but also in them as he is in them, by his essence, power, and presence. This type of consideration is higher than the previous one, therefore it holds second place as the second level of contemplation, by which we are led to contemplate God in all creatures which enter our minds through our bodily senses. It should be noted that this world, which is called the macrocosm, enters our soul, which is called the smaller world, through the doors of the five senses as we perceive, enjoy, and judge sensible things. This is clear from the following. In the world, such things generate. Some are generated and some are governed, the former and the latter. Those that generate are simple bodies, such as heavenly bodies in the four elements. Whatever is generated and produced by the operation of natural power is generated and produced from these elements by the power of the light, which unites contrary elements in composite things. Generated things are composite bodies made from the elements, such as minerals and plants, animals, and the human body. Those which rule over these groups are spiritual substances, either completely united to matter, as the souls of brute animals, or united to but separate from matter, as rational spirits, or completely separated from matter, such as heavenly spirits, which the philosophers call intelligences, and we, angels. According to the philosophers, these later move the heavenly bodies. Because of this, the governance of the universe is attributed to them. By their receiving from the first cause, God, as an influx of power, which in turn they distribute in their task of governing, which has to do with the natural consistency of things. According to the theologians, the ruling of the universe is attributed to the angels in relation to the work of restoration under the dominion of the Most High God. Hence they are called ministering spirits, sent for the sake of those who inherit salvation. So man who is called the smaller world has five senses, like five doors through which knowledge of all things which are in the sense world enters his soul. For through sight enter the sublime and luminous heavenly bodies and other colored objects. Through touch, solid and terrestrial bodies. Through three intermediate senses, intermediate objects. Through taste, liquid. Through hearing, sounds, and through smell, vapors, which have something of human nature, something of air, and something fiery or hot, as is evidenced in the smoke from incense. Through these doors, then, enter both simple bodies and composite bodies made of mixtures of these. We perceive with our senses not only these particular sense objects, which are light, sound, odor, taste, and the four primary qualities which touch apprehends, but also the common sense objects, which are number, size, shape, rest, and motion. Everything that is moved by something else. and certain things move and come to rest by themselves, such as animals. When through these five senses we perceive the motion of bodies, we are led to knowledge of spiritual movers, as from effect to cause. The entire sense world, therefore, in its three classes of objects, enters the human soul through apprehension. The exterior sense objects are the first which enter into the soul through the gates of the five senses. They enter, I say, not through their substance, but through their likenesses, which are first produced in the medium. And from the medium, they enter into the organ, and from the exterior organ, into the interior organ, and from this, into the apprehensive faculty. And thus, the production of the image in the medium, and from the medium in the organ, and the turning of the apprehensive faculty upon it, bring about the apprehension of all objects that the soul grasps from outside. From this apprehension, if it is of a suitable object, there follows pleasure. The senses take delight in an object perceived through an abstracted likeness, either because of its beauty, as in sight, or because of its sweetness, as in smell and hearing, or because of its wholesomeness, as in taste or touch, if we speak by way of appropriation. Now all enjoyment is based on proportion. But the species has the notion of form, power, or operation, according to whether it is viewed in relation to the principle from which it flows, or to the medium through which it passes, or in the term on which it acts. Therefore, proportion can be viewed in the likeness, in so far as it involves species or form, and then it is called beauty, since beauty is nothing other than harmonious symmetry, or a certain arrangement of parts with pleasing color. Or proportion can be viewed as involving potency or power, and then it is called agreeableness, since the acting power does not disproportionately exceed the recipient, for the senses are pained by extremes and delighted in the mean. Or proportion can be viewed as productive and impressive. It is proportion with the agent by its impression fills a need of the recipient, that is, strengthening and nourishing the recipient, which is most apparent in taste and touch. And thus, through pleasure, exterior agreeable objects enter into the soul by their likenesses, according to a threefold form of delight. After this apprehension and pleasure comes judgment, by which we determine not only whether something is white or black, because this pertains to a particular sense, not only whether it is wholesome or harmful, because this pertains to an interior sense, but we judge also and give a reason why it is pleasurable. In this judgment, we inquire into the reason of the pleasure which is experienced in the senses from the object. Now this occurs when we ask the reason why a thing is beautiful or pleasant or wholesome, and we find that the reason lies in the proportion of harmony. The basis of harmony is the same in large and small objects. Neither is it increased by size, nor does it change or pass away as things pass away, nor is it altered by motion. It abstracts, therefore, from place, time, and motion, and consequently is unchangeable, unlimited, endless, and is completely spiritual. Judgment, therefore, is an action which causes the sensible species, received in a sensible way through the senses, to enter the intellective faculty by a process of purification and abstraction. And thus the whole world can enter into the human soul through the doors of the senses by three operations mentioned above. All these are vestiges in which we can see our God. For the species which is apprehended is a likeness generated in the medium and then impressed on the organ itself. Through this impression, it leads to its source, namely the object to be known. This clearly suggests that the eternal light generates from itself a co-equal likeness and splendor, which is co-substantial and co-eternal. It further suggests that he who is the image of the invisible God and the brightness of his glory and the image of his substance, who is everywhere through his initial generation, as the object generates its likeness in the entire medium, is united by the grace of union to an individual of rational nature, as the species is united to the bodily organ. Through this union, he leads us back to the Father as to the fountain source and object. If, therefore, all things that can be known generate a likeness of themselves, they manifestly proclaim that in them, as in mirrors, we can see the eternal generation of the Word, the image and Son eternally emanating from God the Father. In this way, the species which delights as beautiful, pleasant, and wholesome suggests that there's primordial beauty, pleasure, and wholesomeness in that first species, in which there is supreme proportion and equality with the generating source, in which there is power flowing not from images of the imagination, but from the truth of apprehension, in which there is an impression which perseveres and satisfies and dispels all need in the one who apprehends. If, therefore, pleasure is the union of the harmonious with the harmonious, and if the likeness of God alone contains in the highest degree the motion of beauty, delight, and wholesomeness, and if it is united in truth and intimacy, and in a fullness that fulfills every capacity, it is obvious that in God alone there is primordial and true delight, and that in all of our delights we are led to seek this delight. In a more excellent and immediate way, judgment leads us to see eternal truths more surely. Judgment takes place through our reason, abstracting from place, time, and mutability, and thus from dimension, succession, and change, through reason, which is unchangeable, unlimited, and endless. But nothing is absolutely unchangeable, unlimited, and endless, unless it is eternal. Everything that is eternal is either God or in God. If, therefore, everything which we judge with certainty, we judge by such a reason, then it is clear that he himself is the reason of all things and the infallible rule and light of truth, in which all things shine forth infallibly, indelibly, indubitably, irrefutably, indisputably, unchangeably, boundlessly, endlessly, indivisibly, and intellectually. Therefore, those laws by which we judge with certainty about all sensible things that come under our consideration, since they are infallible and cannot be doubted by the intellect of the one who apprehends them, since they are as if ever present and cannot be erased from the memory of the one who recalls them, since they cannot be refuted or judged by the intellect of the one who judges, because, as Augustine says, no one passes judgment on them, but by them. These laws must be unchangeable and incorruptible, since they are necessary, boundless, since they are without limits, and endless, since they are eternal. And for this reason, they must be indivisible, since they are intellectual and incorporeal, not made but uncreated, existing eternally in the eternal art, by which, through which, and according to which all beauty, all beautiful things are formed. Therefore, we cannot judge with certainty except in view of the eternal art, which is in the form that not only produces all things, but also conserves and distinguishes all things, as the being which sustains the form of all things and the rule which directs all things. Through it, our mind judges all things that enter it through the senses.